You're listening to Well Now, Slate's podcast on health and wellness. I'm Maya Feller.
And I'm Kavita Patel. It's spring, a time for fresh starts. For a lot of us, that might mean spring cleaning. And if wellness is what you want, you might want to start with your medicine cabinet.
So I took the plunge and did it last week. Let's see. Children's Motrin, expiration date 0425, that's good. And Walgreens acetaminophen, expiration 0524, that's good. Let's see, something I bought overseas, 0527, paracetamol, okay, 500 milligrams. I'm looking pretty good here. Let's see. Expiration. Oh my goodness. 01-2019. NyQuil cough. That one's got to go in the trash. No good.
Maya, I'm impressed. Not only because you actually took the time to do this, but you were reminding me that I probably need to do it myself. And I heard the oh my goodness about 2019. I can 100% guarantee you I got some potentially early 2000s, maybe even some 1990s in there because I have a bit of a hoarding problem. How did it feel when you did it? Or were there any surprises?
Well, Kavita, so here's the thing. This was the second time that I cleaned out my medicine cabinet because I have a really serious recollection of recently clearing out my medicine cabinet. Apparently, I did not do a good enough job. I was completely surprised because I thought I would not come across anything that was expired. So I was shocked, to say the least. So Kavita, if you opened up your medicine cabinet for us, what would we find?
So I have to confess, because I've got two children, and I know you probably didn't describe where your medicine cabinet is, but mine is incredibly high and hard to reach, you know, kind of almost a generic version of a lockbox, if you will, just because I'm a little paranoid. And I have two versions of my medicine cabinet. The one that has all the over-the-counter medications, I would say that it's pretty well stocked. In fact, so well stocked that I actually just had to buy some of these shelves to arrange the medicine cabinet high up where you could see the tiers of different medications. I kind of have a little bit of a philosophy, Maya, as a doctor, like I need to have everything short of like an operating room inside my house. And so I've got everything from some of the standard over-the-counter medications that you rattled off, the Tylenol, the ibuprofen, some stomach upset. I have every children's version of all of those medications in liquid form because my daughter only likes the liquid form. But then I've got some sleepers in there. I've got different things to help your bowels get moving. I've got some other medications. I certainly carry medication for like first aid almost, you know, ointments and burn remedies and kind of instant mosquito itch, various creams, antifungal, steroid creams. And then in that lockbox, I've got some of the prescription medications. Yes. And here you'll hear a confession. I have some old pain and prescription medications from after my C-section. They are absolutely very old and past their expiration date. Why am I holding on to them? Who knows? But I do have things like that too, and some antibiotics and other things. So that's going to be an interesting conversation to just discuss, like, should they stay in my medicine cabinet? Should I get rid of them?
I have to also admit, Kavita, that I should probably come to your house if something happens.
Yes.
Because my medicine cabinet is not by any means complete. I'd say I have more supplements that, you know, a wide array, but the medicine cabinet is incomplete. And the items that you heard me pulling out, that's about all that there is in there. So I'm coming to you.
And I will say that I do have then in my bathroom a drawer that is accessible to my children, to be clear, but it has all the, I'll call it wishful thinking pills that I should be taking, calcium, vitamin D, magnesium. I do have different forms of krill oil and omega-3 fatty acids and things like that. So I'm certainly human, but I too kind of succumb to a little bit of what I'll call peer pressure that I should be taking these. And I will be honest, I pretty much have the lid barely cracked on those, and I might have taken a couple of those, but they're still sitting there. So, you know, I've got the varying degrees of my medicine cabinet.
I'm with you. Well, I can't wait to have the conversation, you know, and kind of dive into all the things that we should have, the things that we should toss. And I think I know someone who's going to be the perfect one to join us. So stick around. Keep your medicine cabinets, drawers, whatever you have open, and we'll speak to him after this short break.
Welcome back. You're listening to Well Now from Slate. I'm Kavita Patel.
And I'm Maya Feller. Joining us to help spring clean our medicine cabinets is none other than Dr. Mauricio Gonzalez. He is a triple board certified physician in internal, emergency, and obesity medicine, and he's based in New York. Dr. Mao, thank you for joining us.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here with you. I got to say that I love the name of the podcast. Well, now it's just amazing and so smart.
Well, I love that you love it because the first question that we ask all of our guests when we start this conversation is, how do you define wellness?
I think wellness, it's the Wild West nowadays. It can mean literally anything. Right? So we have to make sure that we as healthcare professionals, we pretty much set the expectations to people. And being well now is really simple. It's straightforward. And we shouldn't overcomplicate things. And I think that diet, exercise, sleep, preventive medical procedures, I mean, is more than enough. And then just enjoying life.
I think that if we can enjoy life, then so much of what you describe, Mauricio, starts from there. But I want to make sure that, Dr. Mao, we want to talk about something that all of us can relate to, your medicine cabinet. I think some of us have multiple medicine cabinets. I know I do. Maya does as well. And we'd love to concentrate today in talking about your medicine cabinet and kind of taking inventory of what someone should keep and what someone should throw out. I know that I get this question a lot about, you know, doctor, what should I have so that if I have an emergency? Mauricio, Dr. Mao, what are some of your must-haves in your medicine cabinet?
I'm laughing because when you asked me to be in the show talking about these, I mean, I can't emphasize how big this topic is in every Latin American family. I grew up in Mexico, right? So in Mexico, every grandma and every mom, they're pharmacists. That is like, what do you have? I have it. You know, what do you need? I have it. There are no restrictions to what kind of medications they can buy without a doctor's order in Latin America. So United States is pretty unique in that sense, where you have to go through a physician in order to get medications. So I think that here in the States, it's very important you have a conversation with your doctor as to what you should have in your cabinet. Here in this country, you have to plan. Otherwise, it can become very, very tricky. And as a side note, every time I'm working in the ER with, you know, my coworkers, we always discuss when they go on vacation, what do you bring with you? And it's amazing because it's a very important topic and we don't emphasize it enough and we don't spread this knowledge enough. Everyone agrees that we should have some sort of antibiotic that we're not allergic to, first and foremost, and that it can cover most bacteria that we know. The second one is a potent anti-inflammatory, right? Most of the time, I have prednisone at home. And in terms of antibiotics, I would say that think cheap and think broad. And in my case, my recommendation would be something like doxycycline, which has great safety profile. Most people are not allergic to, but obviously if you're allergic to, that's a no-no. But that's a great medication. That's a great antibiotic. It's super cheap and it works for most things. It's just an insane antibiotic. So we have an antibiotic. We have a potent anti-inflammatory. Obviously, we need some sort of NSAIDs, Tylenol, ibuprofen. I always tell my patients, I have a practice for obesity, hypertension, and prediabetes medicine, so to speak. And a lot of the patients that I take care of have hypertension. And my first question is, when you have a fever or a headache, what do you take? Well, I take ibuprofen. Well, that's the first no. You have to get rid of ibuprofen. NSAIDs can spike the blood pressure, and it's actually pretty common. I always advise them to have Tylenol instead of ibuprofen. So there, we have an NSAID, we have an anti-inflammatory, prednisone, antibiotic. And I would say that, you know, I don't have any history of anaphylaxis. I don't. I've never had it. My children never had it. My wife. But be it as it may, I always carry an EpiPen with us. Always. All the time. I think it's a good practice. Here in the States, it's kind of tricky because you have to be proactive in asking your physician, hey, can you prescribe that? And sometimes physicians are like, but do you have history of anaphylaxis? Well, no. So then why do you want it? But I think it's one of those things that everybody should carry, especially since we know that we can develop anaphylaxis at any stage in our lives. And that's pretty much it. And that's what I have in my cabinet.
Now, Dr. Mao, you know, we're talking about the things that we should have. The other day, I went through my medicine cabinet, and like every good mom, there were some expiration dates. And I was like, I don't know. Is this good? Like, can I keep it? You know, what are the things that we should be looking for? And when should we know to toss something out?
It's a great topic because it's kind of very ironic in so many ways. Like, if you think about pharmacology as a science, the stability of these medications that we have in the United States, like, and I'm talking about pretty much across the board, they have this tremendous stability in terms of, you know, chemical structure. Let's talk about Tylenol. It has an expiration date of maybe a year or so, but they can be stable and they can work fine for 10, 15 years, and we know that. However, one thing is what we know in terms of science, and one thing and another very different is, you know, laws. So I think I always tell my patients I'm a stickler for rules. Like, if it's expire, it's expire. But if it expired like a month ago or 2 months ago and you need to take it now, well, take it now and then you can go to the pharmacy and renew it, but don't feel so much tremendous pressure to just don't take it and wait until you have a brand new one.
Right.
That's my opinion. But again, I always tell my patients to discard every expired medication, but we know for a fact that they're pretty stable. So if it expired like a month or 2 months ago, you should be fine.
Certainly that came, I think, to the forefront in the public eye with COVID, with all those expiring COVID antigen tests.
Yeah.
You know, it was so hard for people to find them. And then all of a sudden, just because of the way those tests were approved by the FDA under a more rapid approval, there were shorter expiration dates. But exactly what you said. So there were countless patients. And then even the FDA said, look, you can use this beyond kind of the listed date. And here's some advice. So we know that the country has kind of had to, the world has kind of experienced this all at the same time, most recently with these tests. Do you, Dr. Mao, think about over-the-counter and prescription medications differently in some situations because it's sometimes so hard to get a prescription, like an antibiotic, for example, and that you kind of keep it on the shelf? I'm going to confess, I do. I have it. I know that they have expired, but just in terms of giving that example, or in your example that I think is a great one that's probably even more common, an EpiPen. We know that the EpiPens also have that expiration date. You need a prescription to get that. Do you have any difference in how you make recommendations between over-the-counter versus prescription medications and their expirations?
Yes. I mean, in over-the-counter medications or over-the-counter, you know, supplements or whatnot, I'm not overly concerned about expiration. Like, hey, if it's like expired 6 months ago, it's fine. Don't worry about it. Don't sweat it. Don't overspend money. In terms of medications, that's where I have some concerns. For instance, I don't know, let's say the patient is taking cholesterol-lowering medications. Like, if it expired a year ago, it's probably safe. It's probably efficacious, but do I want to risk it? right? Especially with a high-risk patient. What if this medication is not working the way it should and it's not lowering cholesterol in the blood the way it should and it can compromise my patient's health? So obviously, there's always these pros and cons in over-the-counter and more lax in prescribed medications. And, you know, I stick to the rules. I stick to the dates.
I have a question for you here. Listen to this, Kavita and Dr. Mao. A patient of mine said to me the other day, oh, you know, I used to take metformin. And so then I said, all right, well, let's go back to the prescribing physician and have a discussion. And they said, oh, no, it was never prescribed. I got it from a friend. Can you tell us a little bit about medication sharing and what folks should think about in that area?
Absolutely. I have so many thoughts about that.
So many thoughts also. So many legal thoughts are what are coming up to mind for me, but that's okay.
That's the dark side of Latin America, right? These, you know, very open access to medications is definitely not ideal. And it leads to self-diagnosis and self-prescribing practices, which we know are detrimental. You know, it's funny. At some point, I was working with this company in Texas, in Houston. And, you know, over lunch, they were telling me about these like clinics that pop out in Texas, where basically people get antibiotics, prednisone from people who are not doctors, but somehow they, I guess they leased a medical license from someone. I mean, it was like very, very weird. And I was like, how is this possible? Right. And I totally see this as a problem, right? As a problem. Because metformin, well, metformin, big deal, right? If you take it, you take it. If you don't take it, you don't take it. Obviously, it has serious side effects, but we're very lucky that they're rare. But I don't know. What about other medications?
Right. And certainly if they're sharing, which I also have seen, Maya, just something that I've brought up with them is that I have to rely on like sometimes what's in our patient record when someone can't give me their history for whatever reason, especially in an emergency situation. And if you don't have that medication as part of your record, metformin is a great example. What might seem like the most innocent drug or commonly used prescription, or even an over-the-counter medication like ibuprofen, and you have somebody with like kidney complications, if you don't even have that like accurate record, you don't really even know kind of what to associate, you know, a potential cause or something with. And so it's, I think if there's one takeaway, it's whatever's in your medicine cabinet, make sure somebody knows about it.
Absolutely.
Like just whatever it is, no judgment, whether you got it from sharing or you got it from, I don't know where, some internet site somewhere, everything should come to the forefront. And there's nothing too small to mention when you're thinking about your medicine cabinet.
And that's why I think, Kavita, that we need to be straightforward and proactive with our practicing physicians. Like, hey, just tell me the truth. Like, yeah, if you want it, and if you have a good reason, let's talk about it.
Right.
Also, let's be real. If a patient of mine asks me for an antibiotic because they're going to travel, come on, I'm not going to prescribe 6 months worth of antibiotic. I'm going to prescribe like maybe for 7 days, right? Like something reasonable. So I think if you have a nice discussion with an adult patient, it should be fine. But you should definitely disclose that so we can have a mutual understanding and it can be documented to avoid mistakes in the future.
Let's take a break here. When we come back, we'll talk more with Dr. Mauricio Gonzalez about which supplements he says are worth the hype and which are not. Stay tuned.
Welcome back. You're listening to Well Now from Slate. I'm Maya Feller.
And I'm Kavita Patel. We're continuing our conversation with Dr. Mauricio Gonzalez on tidying up our medicine cabinets. All right, Dr. Mao, we've been talking about spring cleaning. By the way, like I try to do spring cleaning, it ends up being more like December 31st cleaning. But how often should we be refreshing or throwing out things in our medicine cabinet? I'm going to give listeners my hack. I try to remember to do this around something I can remember, like my birthday or my kid's birthday. And I use this as a reminder, hey, it's that time of the year. It's been a year. Check on what's in your cabinet, check the expiration dates. But I also try to use it to nudge myself to schedule things like my mammogram or other important screenings. What do you do to give people just a guidance on how often to throw things out or look at those expiration dates, Dr. Mao?
I tell them that at least once per year, they should be cleaning their cabinet, at least, at the very least. Now, that thing that you do, Kavita, of pairing, you know, this cabinet cleaning activity with things that you need to do to take care of yourself, like mammogram, colonoscopies, whatever, I think it's such a brilliant idea that we should all be doing. I'm going to copy that from you for sure. But at least once per year, I would say it's reasonable.
Yeah. And also just not forgetting that there's many places we keep medicine, right? Like, so I really do travel like Maya does and probably like you do. I keep some of those non-steroidal, you know, ibuprofen. I keep some things in like a suitcase or like in a travel kind of pack so that I have it for my kids, you know, something under 3 ounces if I have to travel. And so do you also kind of remind or try to think about, you know, different places where you might keep medicines and you forget or you need to remember to go back?
My wife, she's very good at that. Like, she's very good with medication safety for her kids. We have 2 kids, a 13-year-old and an 8-year-old. I mean, they're, you know, old enough to understand. We always tell them, like, whatever you need from medication cabinet, you should ask us first all the time. And they usually do. But we keep it in high places. So that way, it's not easy for them to reach it. And the big ones like antibiotics or things that are more, you know, serious in terms of dosification, we keep them hidden. We keep them in a drawer, which is usually locked. And it's only us that have the keys.
Yeah, that's so smart. I've heard so many stories about families not remembering to lock drawers or cabinet. It's not just their kids. It's the other kids that are coming over as well, right? So that's fantastic advice. I also think too, you know, so I'm lactose intolerant, which means that I have to take Dairy Digest anytime I have dairy. So I've got like tons of nutritional supplements. And those take up, not just because I'm a dietitian, but a lot of space in my cabinet and the cabinets of my patients and I'm sure folks out in, you know, the world as well. But there's a lot of conflicting information, Dr. Mao, about which ones are actually beneficial, which ones are harmful, and also the like what they can and cannot do. What is your specific standard for supplements?
Oh, Maya, you just touch a very touchy point in my life because I have these lengthy discussions with my patients all the time about supplements, especially because, as you know, we don't have great data on so many of them. Like, it's such an unknown place, right? First of all, I always list the supplements that my patients are taking. And right off the bat, I try to discern which ones are reasonable and which ones are not. I'm particularly concerned about medications that might interfere with other medications. Like, for instance, nowadays people take magnesium, ashwagandha, and all these things like they were candies. And I always tell them, listen, we don't know if they interact with the cholesterol lowering medication you're taking. We don't know if they interact with the blood pressure lowering medications you're taking. So you gotta be careful. So I would rather you stop taking them for the time being until we have more data. Another supplement that I'm always very concerned, I'm not saying it's not useful, but I'm saying that we need more data, is curcumin or turmeric or whatever you want to call it. Some, you know, case reports showing that increases liver enzymes and it might be associated with some sort of inflammation in the liver and anemia. So I'm always very like paying attention to that.
We want to talk about cleaning out your medicine cabinet. Some of it means that, like, I've got to be honest, and I'm going to tell you about like my medicine cabinet. You just cited it. I have magnesium to help me sleep because someone told me that that would help me sleep. I have curcumin because I've seen some of those studies. Do I take any of this? No. I have krill oil, and that might make cardiologists listening to this kind of shrink and get upset. And then I bought ashwagandha root. Why? Because my parents are Indian and they've been talking about it forever. I don't take any of it. Like, why am I buying? I've probably spent hundreds of dollars on things I don't need. And I don't understand, like, why do I do it? Why do we do this? Dr. Mao, are we buying a lot of things we don't need? Is this come down to what we started with, a lack of trust? What's happening?
The answer to that question is you are most certainly buying things that you don't need. That's a fact. And that's not a fact in you, Kavita. It's a fact in all of us. And, you know, for the people who are listening, I'm very passionate about social media from a scientific perspective, because I think social media has changed the landscape of how we see the world and we understand information nowadays. What I can tell you is this: my cabinet has a multivitamin, multimineral, like easy peasy, the same thing that I've been buying for I don't know how many years now. It's just a simple multivitamin, period. Sometimes I take plant-based omega-3, which it's reasonable. Does it have strong data to support that I need it? Honestly, no. Is it reasonable? Probably. And that's what I tell myself, and that's what I tell my patients. And I always tell them, listen, there are things that work, things that we don't know if they work, and things that don't work. Okay? And let's try to ascertain which are the supplements that, you know, fall in these lines, in these categories. I'm going to say that curcumin has very good data for osteoarthritis. So if you have osteoarthritis and you're taking curcumin, listen, it has good data, randomized controlled trials, and at the very least, they work just as well as ibuprofen with less side effects, right? But some people take curcumin in the hopes that it's going to prevent colon cancer or Alzheimer's dementia. And it's kind of cruel if you think about it, because they shouldn't be having those hopes, because we don't know. So there's a huge pressure nowadays to optimize every single corner of your life. It's just insane.
Yeah.
It's like Silicon Valley just spread throughout the nation and the world. Everyone is optimizing everything. How you sleep, you know, your core temperature. It's just crazy. And this thing, Kavita, of having patients reaching out to you for crazy labs, it's nothing new. And it's only going to get worse. And I'm going to tell you why. Because now the public, the general public, is accessing, you know, companies where they provide blood work.
Right.
Without the need of the physician.
Right.
And then they get this nice, super, you know, sci-fi PDF report saying, you're good in this, but you're terrible in this. And you freak out. These people freak out. And then they go to their physicians and say, hey, how come you have never requested this blood work? And I want to know how I can bring it down. And then you look at the report and it's, I don't know, whatever, like omega-3 ratio in your blood, things that we don't know as physicians, how important they are to your health. And it creates all sorts of problems.
I do have to say this. So I think we have to clarify for folks that generally, we're talking about a complete blood count, maybe with differential. We're not talking about a Technicolor readout that is, you know, highlight colors.
No, but it's usually like a CBC or a basic metabolic profile. And even I, as like there's something about it, Maya. When a colleague reaches out, that's totally different. But I would say that's rare, and that the majority of the time, it's somebody saying, somebody told me I need to get my blood work checked, and they're not happy with the CBC. They want a comprehensive metabolic profile. They Absolutely. Want 21 different things. And here I go sounding defensive, where I'm not fostering like open collaboration with the patient. But the problem is that when you order something, you have to, I always say, don't order it if you don't know what to do with it. And many times someone comes to me and I'm like, I'm not sure why I'm ordering this, so I'm not going to. And you can see that cycle repeat itself. It's rare that I have somebody who says, I just need a CBC, and that's it. Very rare.
That's the reason why I love the name of this podcast, because it's Well Now against wellness, right? It's versus wellness. And the wellness trend is creating this. whether we like it or not.
Yeah. And it's also buried in the, to your point about more direct consumer access, there's a reason that's so popular, because it's frustrating to interact with me or like a traditional healthcare system and to try to get what you need. So even I try to find ways to kind of go around kind of the usual mechanism. So you listeners can hear it here first. I am buying things I don't need. I am trying things I probably don't need. And I'd love not to.
You know, one thing that I often say to people, especially when folks are taking supplements and they think, you know, they go to the bathroom and they've got this Technicolor urine, I say to them, that's your water-soluble vitamins that you just took in the bowl, right? And so people are like, oh, it's working. And I'm like, no, your cells have taken up what they need and they're letting go of the rest of them. And, you know, Dr. Mao, to your point of optimizing, I think folks just don't have a really good idea of what that means for themselves. And we see these people with extreme wealth living their quote unquote best lives, doing all the things. And the question is, you know, does that really promote longevity? Does that really reduce your risk for diabetes, hypertension, cardiovascular disease? Does that, you know, handle the toxic stress that people are exposed to? I don't know. What do you think?
I mean, I'm super skeptical about everything in relationship to the longevity trend. Super skeptical. And I'm going to tell you why. And this is from a practical perspective. I cannot remember how many patients I've seen that they come to me because, I mean, they see me on social media and they always see that I talk about nutrition, sleep, exercise. I also talk about vaccines and medications, but they see me talking also about the lifestyle portion of medicine. And they always reach out and say, hey, Dr. Mao, I want to see you because I'm dying to get rid of my cholesterol-lowering medication because I don't want to take it because it has so many side effects. And then I always open this conversation with, well, you don't know this, but this medication is literally saving your life. And I always tell them the three medications that have saved millions of lives have been antibiotics, vaccines, and cholesterol-lowering medication. So you're taking the right steps. And I'm also very open with side effects. Like, one thing that I've come to understand is that you have to be open with your patients about possible side effects. They want to hear it from you, right? Especially with cholesterol-lowering medication, which is crazy. It's the wild, wild west. Everything in terms of functional medicine is against cholesterol-lowering medication, and it's creating a huge chaos. So, I don't know. I think the expectations of patients nowadays in 2024 are wild, are very, very crazy. They want to live to be 120 years of age. They don't want to experience cancer. They don't want to experience diabetes. And, you know, it's really hard to set the stage for reality. And I'm actually amazed that in our medical boards, they're not taking steps to train us to have these conversations with our patients.
I mean, I know for sure in nutrition, we're not equipped. You know, you all are light years ahead of us. So let's actually stay on the future for a second. What are some of your tips to help people avoid these, you know, pitfalls of over-purchasing things that they don't need, trying to get, you know, prescriptions for 7 years? Like, what are some of the tips to help folks avoid this stuff in the future?
I think that as primary care physicians, we need to understand this trend. And that's something that we don't do. Like, we fight it. Like Kavita said, we fight it. We want to fight. We don't want to say yes. I think at some point we have to compromise. We have to understand that patients will get their own blood work and they will Google what those results mean. And I don't know, my view right now is that we might as well get ahead and do it ourselves and try to protect the patients from getting the information somewhere else. That's one of the things that we can do. And obviously, in an ideal world, it would be great to have more than 15 minutes with each patient so we can just talk about these things at length. Also, something useful that I always tell my residents and my med students, always put yourself in the side of the patient, right? Okay, let's talk about, I don't know, Mr. Smith, 48-year-old person, obesity, hypertension, comes to your clinic for the first time. He did his blood work prior to see you. Then his A1C is 6.9. And he hears from you that he has new onset type 2 diabetes. And you only have 10 to 15 minutes with Mr. Smith to convey this news of this life-changing diagnosis. Can we blame Mr. Smith for Googling stuff and falling prey to charlatans in social media? We can't. We can't. And that's one thing that we have to understand, that the current healthcare infrastructure is not designed for chronic disease prevention. And this is where most patients fall prey to this, you know, quackery. So it's an important part that we understand how patients feel.
Dr. Mauricio Gonzalez is a New York-based physician, certified in internal emergency and obesity medicine. Thank you so much for joining us.
It was a pleasure being with you. Thank you so much for the invitation.
And that's Well Now for this week. Our show was produced by Vic Whitley-Berry. Ben Richman is Slate's Senior Director of Podcast Operations. And Alicia Montgomery is Slate's Vice President of Audio. If you have something you'd like us to cover, email the show at wellnow@slate.com.
Be sure to follow and rate us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. It helps new listeners find the show. And if you want to listen to Well Now and all of Slate's podcasts ad-free, please consider becoming a Slate Plus member. You've got full access to all of Slate's content, including bonus interviews from your favorite shows like Amicus, Slow Burn, and more. Go to slate.com/wellnowplus for more details. I'm Kavita Patel.
And I'm Maya Feller. Thanks for listening.